Okay. Like salt in a bit when you've done something bad.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Good evening, and welcome to the September 5th, 2017 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. We are, we did not have closed session today, so we have nothing to report about closed session. We are moving right on to the consensus on the order of business. So, do we have a consensus? Everybody good with that? Okay.
I did wonder if we could move up the report from the subcommittee on reviewing the board policies and stuff, just because I'm probably not going to stay for the whole meeting and I'm kind of interested.
I don't think it's a report, it's just doing
the
voting on the
report. Oh, I see. Okay.
And do you want to ask if we want to reorganize that? Bring it earlier in the agenda so you can participate, Walter?
Voting on the
okay, let's just let it go.
Okay. We want you to be here, so let us know if you're not willing to stay. So we now have approval of the minutes of August 22nd, 2017.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor? And Mr. Unger is an abstention. And moving on to our student representatives to the board. Hello. Who would like to start tonight with an introduction? And
hi, everyone. Once again, my name is Ruteek Shinglot. I represent San Luis Obispo High School this year. I'll be this year's acting ASB president. It's been an honor to serve these past 2 weeks. We're getting overwhelmed recently, but with 1,600 students on campus, it's been a great time. We have 430 students in our freshman class, so it's been I'm recovering from a cold. With 430 students in the freshman class, it's been a great time seeing how they become integrated into San Luis Obispo culture. Last year, the Executive Council, Minori Jagia as our Vice President, Oliver Hicks as our Treasurer, and Lindsay McLeod as our Secretary, we decided to base this year around one word, and that was inclusivity. And we've worked very hard over the summer to make sure that happens. Mr. Jimmy Johnson was in charge of Link Crew over summer. He trained a group of juniors and seniors to help integrate some of the freshmen and new students that are on campus this year. We had 200-plus students who participated the week before school started. And on the first week of school, every single day we were out there on campus making sure that those students who had participated in Link Crew and any other freshmen that felt like they needed someone to sit with were welcome to sit with us in the quad. We had a tent and everything. We had snacks out there just to make sure that students feel comfortable on campus and they're welcome every single day. The sense of community that we're trying to build this year is one around spirit and the warm climate that I was used to when I came my freshman year. And I understand that, sorry if I'm rambling, but I understand that not all students feel this way, so it's our duty to make sure, as an ASB and as a school in general, to make sure that everyone knows that they belong. Something that Mr. O'Connor wanted me to touch on was how many students we have on campus this year. Instead of going off for lunch, they choose to stay on campus and eat lunch on campus. Our first week of school, we had a lunchtime activity every single day, just to show our freshmen that sneaking off campus is not worth it, because getting caught means Saturday school. And it's not just freshmen that are staying on. We're seeing more juniors and seniors staying on campus. And that's really what we're trying to work towards, once again, is that sense of community on campus itself and students not wanting to just go eat in their cars or whatever. That was really shown on the spirit rally we had on that first Friday. It was Black and Gold Spirit Day. We have it every Friday. But the amount of black and gold I saw that Friday was the most black and gold I've ever seen at my 3 years and 2 weeks at San Luis Obispo High School. We estimated that around 80% of our 1,600 students wore black and gold that Friday. And as an ASB in general, we were so proud of that because I can't do the math in my head, but 80% of 1,600 is quite a number. excuse me. And it's just making sure that that hype in the colloquial is kept throughout the year. Yes, it's good to have 80% the first week, but it's making sure that those students continue to feel welcome and continue to know that they have a place on campus throughout the year. Tomorrow we have Club Rush, where students can experience all of our extracurricular activities that our campus has to offer. Thomas Prater, who's our inter-club commissioner this year, has been putting it on. He counted that there will be around 40 clubs in our quad tomorrow, including ASB, including Environmental Club, Robotics. The list goes on. There's a place for every single student on this campus, and we're going to make sure that happens. And I make that promise to all of you guys and to the students of SLO High that are sitting there. Another thing Mr. O'Connor wanted me to touch on was the integration of one-to-one devices that were brought on campus this year. In my opinion, I know that there were some, in my opinion, it leads to efficient learning, a fast-track education process. And Dr. Prater will know this, but there were some mixed feelings about it at the Superintendent Senate about the integration of laptops and Chromebooks into the curriculum. But it really helps to know or to have that computer there so you can have access to all those materials online. And we really appreciate that you guys worked that into your budget and got us what we needed. We see students every period sitting in the quad on their Chromebooks working away, so we appreciate it. In regards to sports, we have multiple home games today. Water polo just finished their game. We have a volleyball game that started a couple minutes ago. Tennis, if you saw while you're driving here, tennis is having a tournament there. So sports is another thing that we're really proud of. It encourages school spirit. If one of our sports teams is doing well, students are more likely to associate themselves with the school. So we have high attendance at football games, every single game, home game. So we're really proud of that, and we're excited to play Morro Bay next week in Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. I love that word, inclusivity. Good choice. Hello, Morro Bay.
So I'm Zoe Ashworth. I'm going to be the representative for today from Morro Bay High School, and this is Sierra, who's our president. So as you guys know, we had registration at the beginning of the year, and to kick it off, we are, for the second year, we have done Link Crew. So that day, after seniors and juniors and sophomores had all registered, we had the freshmen held aside. And we brought them into the gym and took them through the whole registration process. And we played a bunch of games with them, did a tour, went through their schedule and showed where they were, which is the same thing we did last year. And a double amount of kids showed up to this Link Crew than last year, which was really nice to see. Like, the stands that they were in were full, and everyone seemed so excited. They all had their shirts that we gave them for free, their Morro Bay Pirate shirts. So it was really nice to see that, knowing that it's my last year and getting to be involved with that. So we really like that. The first week of school, we had a Spirit Week. So Monday, we had a bubble day in the quad, which has been one of our most successful Spirit days. We buy a whole bunch of bubbles, and kids blow bubbles. I mean, it's pretty fun. And then Tuesday we had Donut Day, so it's the game where you just eat a donut off a string. That's always fun to watch. Wednesday was the water balloon toss, and it took up like the whole quad. That's how many kids participated. Thursday was tie-dye day, which was also super fun. And then Friday, we just had our Morro Bay Spirit Day. On that day as well, we had our first pep rally, which went really well. Choir kicked it off with the Star Spangled Banner to honor our school. And the president and vice president spoke. They did a very good job. The cheerleaders also performed, as well as the dance team. And at the end, our football team was introduced, the varsity. And there was a lot of boys doing that as well. And I know they've had two games already, so they've started their season. And we also called down our new teachers, and they had a dance-off, which was really fun. We put them into teams, and they always have a good time with that, and then we vote on the best one. And just last week, we had back-to-school night, and parents got the opportunity to meet and interact with their children's teachers and experience their schedules. So a lot of freshman parents were there, and they can understand, especially if they're first-time parents, where their kids are and what class they're in. And as you guys may know, we also have a new schedule, the hyper schedule. It's going well. I think kids are still getting used to it because we've been block schedule for as long as I can remember. So I know teachers really like it because they have all their classes in a day. They don't have to worry switching back and forth. And then, like Critique said, on the 15th, we have our first home game against SLO. So we're really excited, hoping to have a big turnout because our games are always really important. And we have our homecoming pep rally on the same day. We haven't released the theme yet, but next time when we talk to you, we'll let you know what that was. And we have the announcement video coming out on the 15th as well, so that's when they'll be knowing the theme. And the homecoming game is on Friday, September 22nd, and the following Saturday is our homecoming dance.
Very busy.
Yes, very.
Sierra, would you like to add anything? Are you here to observe tonight?
Next time.
Yes, okay. Yeah. So I just wanted to point out that I think Link Crew is the Morro Bay equivalent of inclusivity. It's the same concept, isn't it? So it's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let me get my computer going again. So we're now moving on to... Yeah. Oh, sorry, guys. You might want to go. You don't have to stay if you don't want to. thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks for coming tonight.
Thank you very much.
But you're welcome to stay also if you'd rather. Oh, and you're staying for effort. Okay, great. Okay. So now we are moving on to the presentation of Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School Summer Achievements.
Great. Tonight we invited representatives from both of our comprehensive high schools to share with us many of the amazing things. They were super busy this summer, and we can be really proud of a lot of the achievements. A couple teachers that were not able to attend did include some of the information here, so I will leave that for you to see. And Morro Bay, if you would like to start, that would be great.
Hi, I'm Haley Milton. I'm the treasurer of your Morro Bay FFA officer team.
Hi, I'm Chloe Duclos, and I'm the president.
And I'm Mark Luna, and I'm the reporter.
I'm Haley Revely, and I'm the historian. And we're here to talk to you about the accomplishments we made during summer and what we hope to accomplish this next year.
So this summer, our officer team went on a retreat. This summer, our officer team went on a retreat to Yosemite National Park, and we did a lot of team-building skills, and we planned out our calendar for the year, and we determined our theme for the year, which is Let the Adventure Begin.
Each day, we held a different workshop to go over the problems that we had last year and how we could build up on them and make them better for next year. We also went over the positives from last year and how we could incorporate them into our activities that we had planned out. And during our downtime, the officers went on hikes through Yosemite Park, we bonded with each other and got to know each other and also started our adventure for the year.
This July, we had a really great group of students show livestock at the fair. We all placed in group one. We made weight and we sold for a lot of money, so that was good. Fallon Molnar won Cattleman's Choice with her heifer, and she received $500 from the San Luis Obispo Cattlemen's Association. We're really excited for next year's fair, and we hope to have the same results.
So each year, students are required to do an SAE project, also known as a supervised agriculture experience. They find a field related to agriculture, and they find like their passion in it. And once they do, they can apply for proficiency awards, which are in the chapter level, sectional level, regional level, and state level. And this past year, we had one student named Katrina Seams who applied for all four levels, and she is top four in the nation for veterinary medicine. So she'll be competing in Indianapolis, in Indiana, in October 25th through the 28th for the national title, and we would like to congratulate her. We also have another event, which is the Aggie Backers Barn Dance, which is on November 18th, and we would like to invite all of you. And if you would like more information, you can contact Ms. Flynn or Mr. Allstott. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very exciting. San Elizabeth High School, I think, is making, they're going to make their way up here too. We have props.
We're San Elizabeth High School FCCLA.
It's great. We have awards.
Right. Hello, yes. I'm Madeline Fletcher from the SLO High chapter for FCCLA. This year I've been elected president.
Hi, I'm Kavai Kiaha. I've been elected vice president this year.
Hi, I'm Alexis Smith, and I've been elected secretary.
Hi, I'm Jenna McFarlane, and I was elected treasurer.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Chu, and I was elected historian.
Although this wasn't over the summer, our whole chapter made it to the state conference for FCCLA, and we competed in a variety of events and attended workshops, so we'd just like to share that with you.
Okay, I competed in child development, so what I had to do was read this book to a panel of judges as if I were reading to a preschool class, and I also created an interactive prop for them to help them in understand the book and learn their like coordination skills.
Nice.
I competed in fashion design. I made the blue denim dress with the sheer overlay.
I was a non-competitor and went to workshops. I went to a financial literacy workshop and learned different things about budgeting there. And I also got to go on a couple field trips.
Hi, I also didn't compete this year. This is my first year joining, but I went to a number of workshops on nutrition and of that sort, and I'm hoping to compete this year.
Hi, I competed in fashion design in my first year with the FCCLA. I had no idea what I was doing, but our wonderful advisor, Mrs. Washmuth, helped me along, and for this presentation, I had to put together a portfolio that involves all the areas of marketing fashion design, so I had to think of an intended audience, pricing, marketing, designs, four of which are in the portfolio and one of which I created here. The California theme is Rethink Denim, so using the idea of the little black dress created by Coco Chanel and Levi's denim jeans, I made this dress that involves black denim and then the gold zippers, which also mirrors our school colors, which I tended to like. At state conference, I took first, which got me a giant trophy, a plaque, a sewing machine, one of which I already have, and then a lot of scholarships, which is probably my favorite part of that experience. I have a full year to FITM, which is the top design school in the state, and I can't wait to use that. And then since taking first, you get to move on to Nationals, which was held in Nashville this summer. That was basically a week in Nashville attending workshops, going to the event and competing. There was a concert, a gala, so many fun things to do. And being the only one from SLO High, I was a little on my own, but I joined other California members and stayed with them for the duration of the conference. At that conference, I took eighth place and also got a gold medal in fashion design. A gold medal means that you've scored higher than 90 points, which apparently is pretty hard to do in fashion design, so I'm happy with that achievement. Going forward this year, I'd just like to expand this club. A lot of our seniors left us, and now we have these members, our officer team, and hopefully we will be adding more members this coming year. if you'd like to take a look at my portfolio.
Love to.
I'd actually like to go up and actually see the
giraffe. Would you like to go play with
like
the giraffe?
See all three.
Yeah. I have to say, Maddie, Coco Chanel would be very proud of that. You did a great job. Ladies, you all did an excellent job. Thank you so much. We're so proud.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar has a question for you.
Are you going to have a club booth at the event? Good. Excellent. Good luck with your growing your membership.
Hi, my name is Hannah Ryan. I'm a senior and SLO FFA's chapter vice president. So here we have a compilation of our student-written blog posts from last year. We wrote our blog post to inform the community about the events and activities that San Luis Obispo FFA participates in. As large supporters of our organization, we would love for you to take a copy home, read through it, and familiarize yourself with the successes and events of our chapter. We also selected a theme for the year, and it is Unleash Your Potential Through Motivation, Innovation, and Agriculture. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Camille Descamps, and I'm part of the Beef Group in our FFA program. And this summer, we competed at the California Mid-State Fair, and Lacey Haas, a graduated senior, won reserve champion heifer. Wyatt Judge, graduated senior, got grand champion heifer, and then supreme grand champion heifer, which means he went on to compete against 4-H kids, who won grand champion and reserved, and then went on to win supreme.
Hi, my name is Stella Bowler, and I'm a junior this year, and I'm also a member of the beef group, but I'm a member of the sheep group as well, and we took around 12 students this year, most of which who also took beef projects, and we were pretty successful, and I hope we do the same next year.
Hi, my name is John Marnick, and I'm part of the SLO FFA swine group. I'm a sophomore, and we took roughly 40 people to compete in the Mid-State Fair. We had 5 champion titles, and we had roughly 5 champion titles, and that's it, actually.
That's a lot. That's great.
Hi, my name is Ty Evans, and I showed both sheep and beef, but I wanted to add on that our Thomas Phelan and Wyatt Judge built a boat, and they took it to the fair, and they won best of show in the large projects under the supervision of Mr. Fay in our industrial arts department.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lily Steele, and I'm a junior, and I'm also serving as the SLO FFA reporter. This year at Fair, Bella Martin, who's a sophomore as well as our chapter historian, started a new project called the Jim Braybrook Foundation. Jim Braybrook was the past CEO of Farm Supply. And the foundation was, she donated her lamb, and a bunch of donors put money towards buying it of $192 per pound, which is roughly $23,000. And that money was then put towards different CTE programs for FFA and 4-H students, as well as future projects and SAEs. So that was the first time it was piloted, and we're really proud of Bella for initiating that. And then also over summer, we found out that we have 2 different projects that were that placed first at the state conference that are competing at national conference for 2 different research projects in environmental science by Megan Fragasso and Molly Massman, and then in social sciences by Liliana Svetich and also Ariana King. And then we also got recent news that our wonderful advisor, Anna Bates, is a part of a select handful of students in California to win the honorary FFA American degree, which is awarded to teachers that are devoted to the program. So a round of applause for her. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Mrs. Bates. And thank you, all of you. You've worked very hard. It takes many long hours and very hot days at the fair. We know that. We appreciate your commitment and very, very happy for all of you.
I'm passing this down for you guys to have a look at. And we are now moving on to correspondence. There was no correspondence as far as I can tell, unless anyone wants to report any correspondence. And then we're moving on to public comment. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak during public comment? Seeing no one, we will move on to business and budget update with Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just a few things. One, transportation. Again, I kind of talked about it a little bit with the board, but we are seeing a huge increase in ridership this year. So I don't know why or what's happening type of thing, but whether kids and parents just trust the bus system or how that's working. But, I mean, just a lot of kids getting passes, riding the bus, as well as, you know, the city actually has the Slow Tripper, which has a couple of routes, actually, that go to the transportation hub. And so they are seeing a ton of kids also on those city buses. So it's just all together. So I'm working with Annie to try to figure it out, so dealing with overload issues and buses and doing the best we can as we go through. But it hopefully it'll all calm down over the course of this week, and we'll make sure that every kid has a ride. Kudos to Julie and her staff and our fiscal department getting unaudited actuals completed, and so she'll be presenting that tonight. Can't understate the time and effort and energy, and we have very good audits here in our district. We're super fortunate to have the team that we have that put these documents together for the board. So she'll be sharing that. We've had a lot of personnel turnover. I mean, I joked with Kristen and her staff back in the spring, hey, it should be pretty quiet this year, you know, in terms of probably not hiring a lot of extra people, those types of things. And I think Beth had 41 pictures of new certificated employees alone. So, I mean, they've been super busy. And so, again, kudos to Kristen and her staff and keeping up with both classified and you'll see a couple of key individuals tonight, I think, on the board packet that you know and we all love that are going to be retiring. And so we can talk about that later. And then I did meet with Ty Green this week to talk about the Avila project, where we're at. And so my goal is that Ty is going to join the board in closed session, hopefully at prior to our next meeting, to kind of review, kind of update, and hopefully We have a very good path to kind of finish that project and get some income to the district that we need. So thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer?
So, Mr. Pinkerton, I just wanted to confirm that every child who needs to get to school has been getting to school the last couple of weeks that is involved with needing transportation. Is that happening? Do we have kids?
So yes is the answer to that question.
Thank you.
Buses are packed, so sometimes three to the seat. We have our mechanics driving, extra, you know, field trip driver drive. So they're all pitching in right now to make sure it all works. And Annie's diligently working on shifting routes where she can here and there type of thing, and adjusting anywhere they're at. So it's from that standpoint, yes. There's been a few issues and. Fortunately for us, we do have cameras on all of our buses, so we can see the reality of whether, you know, things that are brought to our attention are truly happening or not in terms of the overloads on buses. But we're making sure that all kids get a ride.
And then what's the longest a student is on a bus?
You know what? I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. But it can be a long time. I mean, it can be over an hour for students. So especially our Pacheco routes, where you have, you know, when you have a non-neighborhood school such as Pacheco, mm-hmm. and it's going to various spots throughout the city, and even over to the coast, those can be pretty long trips for kids.
And do you anticipate that will remain during the year?
Those probably will remain.
Okay.
And they have. I mean, it's been like that.
Yeah. Okay.
In terms of it.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks. So, Ryan, along with the increase in population, are we looking at the need for more buses?
So in terms of student population, our overall student ridership, overall student population is actually, we're seeing a spike in secondary, less in elementary. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things where right now with Annie, the goal is to today they got the bus pass list. So we've really been trying to get parents to sign up for bus passes. So we truly know who our ridership is. That's one. And that only takes a couple weeks. So we don't turn kids away, hey, you don't have your bus. But, you know, we threaten, but we don't actually physically do it and tell kids they can't ride the bus. You know, no, we're not leaving any kindergartners at school. So that said, once we have that information and kind of where we're at, I think we're going to – so today's goal with our bus drivers in the afternoon was to see, you know, who didn't have a bus pass yet, who did, who didn't, who got on the bus, so we could see kind of what is our true population of students that are riding. So from there, we're going to go back now, look at the list, and we're literally going to have to probably go and see where kids live. And so to see, are kids getting bus passes in areas that don't necessarily are supposed to get on the bus? Are they walking to a bus stop where they can then ride to school? So that's something we're going to have to look at and see. And ultimately, if we have to hire another bus driver or go that route, then that'll be something I'll be talking to the board about.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Ryan, are the cameras real-time, or do you use them to verify a report subsequently?
Verify reports.
Okay.
Oh, and Mr. Quisenberry.
So regarding the buses, what was my question? I just lost it when he was talking about the never mind. There was just a question in my mind whether the process for getting a bus pass has been simplified. Years ago, parents had to come to
bring a letter,
bring a letter and so forth. Yeah. So is it done pretty much online now, or can they go through the school too?
So parents can go into transportation and get a bus pass if they want to. 99% of the people now do. It's all online. So the bus pass system is all online. They just sign up. For a long time, we required them to bring in, like, especially the free and reduced lunch, because we give them free transportation. So we used to require them to bring their letter, their physical letter, to the transportation department. So we don't do that anymore.
Okay.
So now we just work with food service and we check through that way. So we tried to streamline that and make it as easy as possible on parents. So, you know, if they're in Morro Bay or Los Osos, that they don't have to drive to the BG&T yard, you know, those types of things. So it seems like it's much more efficient, much better. And we just have a lot of kids signing up for bus passes, which, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Friendly. Mr. Unger.
So just kind of on that note, I think it's a good time to remind people that they should try to look and see whether they qualify for free and reduced lunch. Another reason to do that would be free or discounted bus passes, as well as contributing to their school and getting nutritious meals for their kids.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Buckman.
So we're going to have a gym moment. Let's move on. Although an interesting thing with the free and reduced lunch signups, it does help us qualify for federal money, so for
yes,
Title I and Title
I.
II. But
yeah.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And now we are moving on to educational services update.
Great. This week we've had the pleasure of attending a lot of back-to-school nights. So those have started, and it's a great opportunity, as I know I've seen all of you at them. It's been an amazing opportunity to hear from principals and teachers both about what their goals and missions are for the year, as well as see families engaged and really connecting and seeing what they can do to support their students this year. So it's been a very positive experience, and those will continue. Second, just wanted to update you that we have received our SBAC scores, but unfortunately they remain embargoed as the state finalizes a few things, and so we are excited and looking forward to being able to share those results with you whenever they do release that. So look forward to being able to do that in our near future.
Great. Mrs. Shepherd.
I have a question, and this is probably a little too early to report on this too much, but I was curious after watching this morning's news about DACA, how many, if you have any sense of the number of families who may be affected by that in our district.
Off the top of my head, I do not. No,
Don't ask status and all of that, but if you have any sort of general sense.
Yeah, a lot of those questions, we welcome the students that walk in, and we're, you know, happy to have them here, and we don't ask for a lot of that information. So obviously principals will stay in touch with families and kids that need any support, and we will look into it further, but I don't have any information on my fingertips.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And, oh, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, Measure D.
Oh, going ahead.
Sorry.
You're ready. You're eager,
ready,
aren't you, tonight? Okay, what's happening with Measure D, Mr. Pinkerton?
So, yeah, we do have a study session next Thursday. There's also a PUC meeting later on that in the afternoon that I believe Dr. Prater shared with the board. Mm-hmm. So next Thursday, we hope to have a pretty big agenda to get through, but my goal is to kind of walk you through and our latest look at all of our project budgets for Measure D and kind of where we're at and funding and those types of things and kind of talk to you about that. We are going to review San Luis Coastal properties. So there was a couple questions that came up from board members in terms of, besides our school sites, what else is, you know, kind of part of our real property here? So I'll be sharing that with the board. We'll give you some construction updates from the summer. Summer projects, you know, our painting at Del Mar and Sunnyside and Sinsheimer, our work at the robotics room, so other things. The pool is getting close. We poured concrete, Morro Bay High School pool at the deck, which is fantastic and a great sign. And then we'll also bring the board up to date with our current projects that are out to bid, which include C.L. Smith, the Annex Classroom Building, as well as the J-Wing at Slo High and the J-Wing Classroom Building at San Luis Obispo High School.
Excellent. Look forward to that. And moving on then to resolutions 5.01. Ms. Lang.
Hi, good evening. So as we do every year, we are presenting our GAM limit resolution for the board approving and acknowledging that we have not exceeded our GAM limit. On page 3, if you could scroll down, Kim, all the way to the bottom, you can see that our appropriations, not all the way to the bottom. There we go, right there. The appropriations subject to the limit and the adjusted limit are about $7 million difference, $7.5 million almost. So we are well within our limit. It's very unlikely that we would ever exceed our GAN limit because we are so far under and because the limit keeps going up as our appropriation subject to the limit keep going up. So there's always going to be that gap there. If by chance we ever did exceed it, we would have to notify the state. The amount in excess would simply be part of the state GAN limit, and that's all that would happen, I believe. So unless you want more details on this. Sure.
Mrs. Sheffer, I think, has a question.
If there are no other questions, I was...
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, Mrs. Sheffer.
I would move that we adopt resolution number 02-17-18, the GAN limit calculations for 2016-17 and estimated calculations for 2017-18.
I'd like to second that, please.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. This is a roll call vote. Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Passes 6-0 with one absent.
Aye.
And moving on to item number 6.01. And that is being presented by Ms. McGrath.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm here with Mrs. Shields and Mrs. O'Hagan, and we're here to talk to you about professional development and summer highlights, things that happen with our dedicated teachers this summer. We will look at career technical education, as well as some things that happen in K-12 science, reading, and then also technology and innovation. This will include some professional development as well as some collaborative work that happened between our teachers. So first, looking at career technical education, a lot of it was focused around career readiness. You can see that our teachers took place in some summer externships. Teachers and counselors, this happened to average around 25 to 30 hours at our local businesses. And you can see a comment here from Mr. Fay. a really neat opportunity for teachers to connect and really receive professional development from our local industry. As well, many CTE teachers receive summer certifications, examples like Cisco, OSHA, Adobe training. This was a neat opportunity for them to continue to modernize their understanding and make sure that their knowledge and what's being taught in their class really matches with what business and industry needs as well. For career technical education professional development, it was linked a lot to work-based learning. So teachers mapped out the needs for their pathway and then connected it on a new portal that is a really neat opportunity. Liz Moore has done some great work with connecting teachers' needs. Teachers obviously love to see business and industry connect in different ways to their students, and business and industry can also use this portal in order to conveniently make the connection when they say, this is what I'm needing, this is what I can offer, and then that portal allows that opportunity for them to connect. So a lot of work was done related to that this summer. In secondary science, I'll cover the secondary part, and then I'll hand it over to Mrs. Shields to cover the elementary part. But one of the big components that happened at the end of last year as well as this summer is, as you remember with science, we have our next generation science standards coming, which allows some big shifts in our framework and in the courses that are offered, especially at the high school. So the focus was on the next generation science standards for biology. So teachers teamed together to create some draft units, and they also created a course overview so that they can begin to kind of be on the same page when it comes to the biology implementation. They'll continue that work throughout the year. They have representatives at each of the schools, and additional teachers even participated this summer that were interested in being a part of that. So their collaboration and development of that course will continue, and then we will likely be resubmitting that to A to G after the final course is developed so that it will be completely aligned A to G and with next generation science standards. I'll hand it over to Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. In elementary, our teachers met by grade level this past August to dive into the FOSS and GSS aligned units. They learned about the second module, so now our teachers this year will be teaching module 1 and module 2, and by next year we will be in fully implementing our NGSS science curriculum in K-5. In reading, I know I sent you a Friday focus about this, but I'm happy to get to tell you a little bit more about the Reading Institute that was held back in June. I think a lot of people think our teachers pack up their rooms and say goodbye for summer and come back the day before school starts, and that's certainly not the case in San Luis Coastal. We had over 150 teachers participate in a four-day Reading Institute the week after school got out. It was led by the Teachers College, Columbia University. We had 7 consultants working with our teachers in multi-grade level teams. Each day, the teachers spent 3 hours in college-like setting learning theory and research related to best instruction and teaching. The second half of the day was spent engaging in putting that research into practice. They collaborated with other teachers and learned specific strategies for use in their classrooms this year. Feedback from the Institute validated the hard work that teachers and principals have been putting into implementing our district reading program and stretched their thinking about next steps and further learning opportunities around reading. Teachers left the week feeling rejuvenated, ready for summer certainly, but they were excited to dig into the reading progressions, assessments, small group and conferring structures to be able to reach our readers this year where they are and bring them forward in their reading skills. So in addition to that, based on the feedback from our teachers as well as advice from the consultants, a number of teacher teams met this summer and created a variety of tools that will be used by our teachers this year. They strengthened the alignment between the reading curriculum and our standards-based report card. They also created a tips and tricks tool to support the planning and preparation work needed for each of our units. Last spring, teacher teams developed reading, writing, science alignment scope and sequences, meaning we've got our science, we've got our reading, and we've got our writing. Each one has its own way of where and how you should teach it.
we brought in teacher teams in spring to think about how might we align those, kind of think of it with thread, where you would do some integrating, where you're reading in science and writing in science and using the science context in your reading writing lessons, because we know that age-old concern that I can't fit it all in. I can't fit it all in. And this is a direct attempt at how can we not fit it all in, but plan and integrate in a way that it fits in, and we kind of takes the lines out of the subject areas and puts it into more of an integration. So that was the beginning of that work was done in spring. And then this summer, teachers developed book recommendations by grade level to be purchased with LCAP funds that will support those aligned units. And finally, a small group of teacher leaders participated in a webinar series this summer focusing on conferring and small group work and reading workshop. And these now group of experts will share their learning with from the webinar with our teachers across the district in after-school workshops. In mathematics, grade-level teachers met this summer to review and revise each of our trimester benchmark common assessments, so they'll be ready to go for this year. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mrs. O'Hagan, who's going to talk to you about technology summer activities.
All right. So I'm happy to report that we had another successful Techie Teacher Boot Camp this summer. This was our third in a row. And we held it at Sinsheimer this year, and we had about 75 teachers sign up. I was able to reduce costs by having it just one day instead of the 2 days like we'd had in previous years. And it was a packed house. So I used this the data feedback that we received from the Bright Bites survey, I know you remember that from last year, to help develop some of these sessions. So I know we had a need for more digital citizenship and digital literacy in our classrooms, so I taught a workshop on that. We also focused on assessment and feedback and online assessment and feedback, so we had a lot of Illuminate workshops as well. And collaboration and critical thinking, and it was the four C's, the critical thinking, collaboration, communication and creativity, all within technology. So those were the workshops that we'd built and developed for our summer Techie Boot Camp. And we had a lot of great feedback. I did not edit this at all, but I couldn't fit them all in. So they were all of it was very, very positive from the teachers. So we had we learned about the new Google Sites as a communication tool for parents and students. Again, you can see that they liked learning how to make their Illuminate tests online. Integrating, Amy was just talking about integration, and we did a lot of integrating, learning how to use technology to integrate the different subject areas. And it was very, very positive. People liked the format. It was a great feel. So I have even more comments, but I just, like I said, I couldn't fit them on here. So I'm really proud of the teachers that that came, and also the presenters, the EdTech leads that helped me present. So with that, I always like to include a video, because that kind of tells the story here. So I think you'll need to start it from there, and you can watch, and we'll make it full screen.
had to end it on that.
Mr. Buckman?
It's so impressive, and the number of participants keeps going up. Mm-hmm. It's just great.
Yeah, it's just, and that's, they just thank me and my team every year for putting this on, and it's so much fun just to see everyone's relaxed. Summer's here. It's right before they leave on vacation, and they can apply themselves and kind of let their minds open up and be more creative. So it's one of my favorite things to do.
That's great. One of the things I noticed this year in this slide presentation, mm-hmm. there seems to be a large mix of different types of equipment. So is mm-hmm. something happened that's allowing you to go cross-platform like that?
I think the teachers themselves, they're more comfortable with technology, so they're able to use the iPads for things that we couldn't use before. So they're using the iPads more as a presentation tool and to create videos, and then they're using Chromebooks to model how to share things and collaborate with their students and each other. So, yeah, you will. And a lot of teachers from that BrightBytes survey wanted more help with multimedia presentations, so we offered a lot of video editing workshops, and so they were able to use all the different devices to kind of do the same thing. So I think we've really built up the efficacy of our teachers.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Unker?
So I just think it's really important to point out, especially to people, again, who might be watching this, the importance of professional development mm-hmm. and the link to that, between that and our LCAP mm-hmm. and our LCAP goals, specifically in this case regarding reading mm-hmm. math, and how this helps bring our teachers to that level of professionalism, that they're helping our kids move forward, mm-hmm. hopefully closing that achievement gap.
Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Sheffer?
I have a question. I believe this will be for Mrs. Shields.
Okay.
And it has to do with NGSS, with the science standards mm-hmm. in the elementary grades. And have we started those this year with the FOSS?
We actually started them last year. Our teachers, we brought teachers in January, had a one-day training, well, after we had some prior trainings mm-hmm. about the shifts and the standards, but we had a one day with the new curriculum with the expectation that every teacher would teach that first unit between January and June of last year. So now this year we're doing two out of three units, and then we'll finish up with training in June after school gets out, and then we'll have the full program, which is three units, in place next year.
Okay, so my question mm-hmm. is, I know in the past using FOSS there were some concerns about the prep time. Mm-hmm. And has that changed at all? Are teachers still feeling that there's so much time getting the materials ready? Are they doing it, teaching those lessons in their classroom, and then are there materials they have to get ready, and how do they do that, and how's that sorting out?
With the help of our K-12 science TOSA, Tristan Shorba, it's sorting out well, but differently at each school site. I cannot look you in the face and say, yep, the new units are low prep, because hands-on science is high prep.
Sure.
What we're trying to put in place while we still have Mr. Shorba with us is systems at school as well as at district for checking out materials, for getting the needed resources, not only the consumable materials, but the little animals that go with the various units, in a way that will last when Mr. Shorba goes back to the classroom. It's still a lot of prep. Good hands-on science instruction involves a lot of preparation.
Okay, I just recall many years ago
mm-hmm.
That at the school where my children attended mm-hmm. elementary school, as you may recall,
I do.
We actually, the FOSS lessons were actually in a separate room, so they could be set up because of the amount of prep time, and I will recall arriving and spending time putting out things like wooden tongue depressors mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing. So is it more challenging doing it, having the materials in the classroom and figuring out how to get it to all those bodies?
Well, we actually have both. We still have our science labs at each of our school sites. Some of them are now science art utility labs, but we do have these rooms available. The materials are cumbersome. We know that. You know, these hands-on science materials come with two, possibly three large boxes for each of the modules. So we really need to think smart about it. I will tell you something that I'm seeing more and more often at school sites, well, a couple different things, a quasi-departmentalized approach, okay, where fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, you've got the one teacher teaching the social studies science or the science and the math component, and the other teacher teaching more of the social sciences. It's not being done the same at each school site because of site autonomy, and I applaud that because I think based on the expertise and the needs of each school site, it's being solved a little bit differently. Another site, I've seen it where they're looking at all three of the modules, and I will tell you there's at least half of our schools that have said we need the third module now and we don't want to wait for the training, and so that's been exciting news. They're ready, where they've had, if you have two, possibly three teachers at a grade level, a different teacher is going to be the lead in teaching that module. So they're going to become the expert on one module, all the materials that go with it, and they're only going to teach it once, and they'll do like a rotation with their kids. It's just another way to make it a little bit more efficient.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think that this hands-on learning is so crucial to our kids to interact and understand the world around them and work collaboratively, all those things we're trying to aim for, but I know logistically it can be challenging, but I also know our teachers and sites are up for the challenge. But thank you for the additional information.
Thank you, Mrs. Shields. Thank you, Mrs. O'Hagan. And thank you, Mrs. McGrath. Oh, and Jim, Mr. Quisenberry.
You're thanking me, or you're letting everybody go. That's all right. That's fine. I'll talk with you all later.
And... They're available.
Just a quick couple of question, a couple of observations. First, how many teachers participate in the externship for the CTE teachers? I mean, Tim Fay is an illustrious graduate of Morro Bay High, so I know Tim, but were there a few others?
I don't have the number in front of me. I want to say it was around 10.
Oh, okay.
Around 10,
great.
I believe.
That's wonderful. And then my observation was about the importance of these summer workshops because the high level of collaboration. And I thought that really is very impressive because those people will go out and share that with their colleagues. And the last one was the Teacher Techie Boot Camp. I just have to mention this, that there was a wide variety of teachers from some fairly new faces to some very veteran teachers, and I think that's wonderful too. So thank you for your hard work.
We're moving on to item number 6.02, approve unaudited year-end actual financial statements for 2016-17. Ms. Lang.
Hello again. We have completed the 2016-17 financials and closed the books. And as Ryan said, it is truly a group effort, and I do want to acknowledge the people in fiscal services who work all through the summer putting all the little pieces together, and some of the pieces we don't even get until August, so we literally don't get the books closed until about a week ago. So it's a big job, and they do a great job doing it. Kim, could you open just the narrative? I think it's the one on the right, I guess. Yeah. We'll just go over some of the numbers to show you how things have changed since the last time you approved the budgeted items, which would have been at estimated actuals. Excuse me. You can see that revenues actually appear to have decreased by $500,000, and I'll explain that. In property taxes and LCFF, that's the only category that actually increased between estimated actuals and the end of the year. And that was mostly due to property taxes, which came in about $280,000 higher than we anticipated. We also didn't have to do as big a transfer to adult ed as we had budgeted, so kudos to Sally, keeping within her budget.
And also the special ed property tax transfer was a little bit higher. Now, on the ones that decrease, this is because of our deferred revenues and carryovers. So oftentimes in the federal, state, and local revenues, these are restricted programs that we have a certain amount we know we're supposed to get. If we don't spend it, then we carry it over to the next year. So we had quite a bit of, especially the state revenue, which is mostly attributable to the CTE grants. You can see below that that our deferred revenues, and these are revenues that we have already actually received and have not spent all of them, so whatever we haven't spent gets actually moved from one year to the next. And that amount came to $884,000. And you can see that the career ed tech was the biggest one there. That was $863,000 that we're actually moving from one year to the other. You can go down a little bit, Kim. Thank you. In expenditures, we underspent what we budgeted, which we almost always do because of carryover, by about $3 million. Most of that was in books and supplies, which is where most of our expenditures are budgeted when we are holding it there. And you can see that below, if you can move it down just a little bit, Kim, our restricted ending balances came to $1.3 million. Now, those are balances that will be budgeted next year, but only on expenditures. Revenues have already been accounted for, so that'll increase our expenditures in 17-18. Our unrestricted carryover will also be budgeted only in expenditures next year, and that was $1.2 million. And overall, we did do a transfer from the general fund to Fund 20 because we felt like we were in a position where we could do that and we want to keep that funded. So we moved $950,000 over to Fund 20. And overall, we did have a deficit of about $1.3 million, bringing our ending fund balance to about $16,500,000 in the general fund. If you could go down to the chart there, the summary of all funds. This is our total balance in every fund that we have. So you can see the general fund up there at the top. We have our balance in adult ed. Cafeteria fund was about $155,000. You can see our Fund 20 increased a little bit over the beginning balance. That's probably mostly due to interest. Fund 21, we received the Series B bond, so that increased up to $79 million. Capital facilities, we're still getting in developer fees, and of course we have the need for those. We'll be using that on some of our projects, so that balance is $10 million. The Fund 51, again, that's just on paper, so we get that information from the county assessor's office, and all we do is we book it. We never see the revenue and never see the expense, but we have to have it on our books. And then Fund 73 is a new one. That is the, I don't know if I can pronounce this right, Valthaler, thank you, Verathaler Scholarship Trust. And we received the revenue there, and we're starting to see the scholarships being distributed this year. And that's all I have. If you have any questions, I know Brian is going to go over some more big picture items for you.
Any questions from the board? Thank you.
Any questions on unaudited actuals? Yes.
Just, Julie, just real quickly, when during the year is the final audit done? When do they come in and do that?
They should be here the first week of October.
October.
They're coming a little bit later this year, and then they'll report usually in the December meeting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So just a quick rundown of our 10-year projection that we've been doing for the board, kind of updated. So, again, when unaudited actuals happens, that's the reality. That is these are the real numbers for 16-17. After that, we put together projections. So it's what, you know, in the past, here's what we've received, here's what we know in terms of donations and materials and supplies and electric bills and water bills, all those types of things are built into this. A couple of key things I just want to point out. So the first one on the revenue side, and I may change our projection at first interim. And that would be, in particular, at the very bottom, it has Diablo DCPP settlement. So $2 million a year for those years that's counted, that I projected we're going to receive. So the way the PUC and how slow it's going right now in terms of that settlement and coming through, I'm a little apprehensive of counting on that in terms of, again, from a projection standpoint. So our hope is that's going to happen, that settlement's going to happen. It's going to help us, as we've discussed, slowly make the cuts and the adjustments that we need to make to our budget. There's a big meeting next Thursday that I think we're going to be attending and kind of advocating for that with the PUC. But it's, again, we had expected that by now, by September, October of this year, that we were going to know kind of one way or the other, then it was going to maybe have an appeal process. But by October, November, we would have a clear indication in terms of what was going to happen with that settlement. So it seems like things have really slowed down a lot in terms of that pace. So we'll see how this goes over the next week. Of course, we're working with Jim Erb and with the county and different organizations, along with our attorney, to kind of, you know, go through those waters. And I believe Dr. Prater and I and Mrs. McGrath are going to probably try to set up another meeting with PG&E just as a check-in. We've built in a 3.5% property tax increase over those 10 years. So that, you know, kind of based on where we've been over the previous 10 years till now, kind of makes sense. Again, trying not to be too liberal, not to be too conservative. This is a projection. Something happens to the economy. We do find out our real kind of property tax numbers in October, November, you know, where we know for sure kind of where we're at. So that ties into our first interim at that point. But again, as Julie said, it does kind of change over the course of the year. We can see a little, you know, a little decrease, a little increase towards the end of the year. So those are kind of the key revenues. Now, the last thing that I will say on the revenue side, which can be a little bit the problem with putting those Diablo Canyon payments into this 10-year projection, is in 26-27, that revenue goes to zero. So here's something that you see, hey, 10 years, $2 million, $4 million over the time. So it can lead to a little bit of false security in terms of what's going to happen on the revenue side. Okay? So in 26-27, that number goes to zero. In terms of our expenditures, again, we highlight the STIRS and PERS issue. That's something that does not seem like it's going away. Even though I will say recently there's been some articles about STIRS and PERS, that their investment ratio has been up, so it's been better than it has in the past. But it's still that this picture, actually, especially on the PERS side in particular, could get worse in terms of the actual percentage that they're going to require districts to have to pay for employees. So that's, you know, those are critical things and high cost dollar items that we definitely watch all the time and kind of key in. The two green lines, of course, STIRS on behalf. The state wants to show how much they put in, how much gets paid out to employees. That's what the STIRS on behalf. We really don't talk about it too much because it's an in and an out. It really doesn't affect our budget. Last one, health and welfare, is just a key ongoing, and probably everybody in the state of California and the United States understands the issues that we have with healthcare and increasing costs. And that's the same for us. Because we don't have a cap in our district healthcare cap, those are costs that not only escalate for the district, but also for our employees. And so that said, when you go down, what I would say is, even if I took the $2 million out for this year, I feel like we're about a balanced budget, because our donation budget isn't as high in terms of on the revenue side. So I feel good in terms of where we're at this year, moving forward, whether or not the Diablo settlement happens this year, we receive those dollars now. In future years, it becomes a critical component of deficit reductions, dealing with revenue loss for Diablo and those property tax revenues if that settlement does not happen for us. So we've kind of maintained the same level of overall reserves over the past 3 years. So we had a surplus last year, deficit, or surplus 2 years ago, deficit in 16-17. It looks like we're going to be balanced, which is a good place to be. So we're able to meet the board's 10% reserve requirement, and I feel like we're in good fiscal shape, mainly because of the reductions that we made. So again, last February, the board kind of put forth our first kind of round of some personnel cuts to bring that down. So that was critically important for me to be able to say, you know, that we're in a good spot in terms of the budget. So we'll see what happens with that mitigation settlement. It'll be very important.
Is there anyone from the board with questions? Mr. Buckman?
You want to go to the public first?
We're not taking
No, we're good? Okay. So I'm just quickly looking at it in the expenses. Mm-hmm. When we talk about a transfer from Fund 20?
Yes.
Want to elaborate on that? Because we're up in the millions of dollars.
Yeah, Fund 20 is our post-retirement benefits. So for employees that retire with the district age 55 to 65, the district continues to pay their portion of health insurance. So Fund 20 was established to have a fund to fund those in future years. So it's right now just kind of, you know, ideally we would be taking none out in expenditures and we would be putting more in revenues side. So right now it's just kind of a balance, kind of keeping the same overall amount in Fund 20. When we do our actuarial study every 2 years, we really should have about 12 to 14 million in that account. Right now we have, you know, over 9 million. So that said, it's still most districts don't even have that type of revenue in Fund 20 built up. So, again, it is a positive thing for the district in terms of the Fund 20.
Mr. Quisenberry.
So do we, and this is kind of related to Fund 20, do we keep track of the approximate age of our teachers when they retire? So that, you know, we're really Fund 20 is, like you say, the 55 to 65. Are we finding teachers staying on later than 60 on average, or do we see a lot of earlier retirements than that?
So the actuarial study actually studies that.
Okay,
it does. So when they come in, they look at all those numbers and where teachers are retiring and what's happening and how many teachers we have. So all of that builds into that actual study.
Okay, thank you.
I guess we can't take much comfort in the fact that the STIRS and PERS investments are up because the entire market is about as... Do you think it's relatively
just
rising?
I mean, it is a positive sign, I think, in terms of overall, in terms of, you know, where things are where they're headed. It does really concern me. I mean, where the ceiling was going to be 21%, now they're talking 26, 27% in terms of district...
PERS.
So, I mean, they're looking at ramping that up. I think there's some legislation involved in terms of STIRS that they can't, you know, they can't necessarily go that high in that area. But it's, again, that is a problem that is going to face every school district in the state. Mm-hmm. So we will not be alone in terms of the pain and suffering that school districts are going to have to go through to keep up with those retirement costs that are coming forward. So we'll see what happens, especially as the LCFF levels for most state-funded districts, and they're not receiving big chunks of extra revenue each year, it's really going to be an issue for a lot of school districts around us. And personnel costs are key. So watching personnel costs is something that, you know, we're constantly looking at and making sure we stay within that, you know, hopefully that 85% realm, because we are people business.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Okay. And we are now moving on to item number.
Are you looking for? I move to approve the unaudited year-end actuals.
I'm sorry. Yes, and before we take a vote, we would like to offer this opportunity for anyone from the public who'd like to speak to this matter. Seeing no one, Mr. Unger has made a proposal. Anyone else want a second? And Mr. Buckman is second. So we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. And this is a roll call vote. This is a roll call. No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 6-0. Mr. Millar has left. Thank you. And now moving on to 6.03, revisions to Board Policy 6141-2.
Good evening. Tonight I bring forward Board Policy 6141.2, And the title did change based on some of your feedback last time. Religious expression and activities in the schools is what we did based on your feedback of including activities. You can see that this is the second reading and would appreciate your approval this evening and happy to answer any questions.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
Is there further discussion or?
No, I'm just.
Okay, great. I'd like to make a motion to approve the board policy.
Okay.
6141.2.
I'll second.
Is there a second? Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And that passes 6-0 without Mr. Millar.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Roger. That's 5-0. 5-0, sorry. I forgot Mrs. Roger is not with us tonight, too. Okay, thank you, Mrs. McGrath. I'm having connectivity issues here. My battery is going. Okay, one sec. Sorry. Yes, I may have to use yours for a second. Thank you.
Here,
or a blue. Oh, perfect. Thank you. Yep. Now I have a plethora of.
So
thank you.
Go back before done.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, it would be really helpful if I just had a blue sheet.
I have one.
Thank you. that would just be fine. Thank you. Thanks, Mark. You can have that back. Thanks, dear. Okay, and going on to item number 6.04, and this is the proposed board meeting calendar changes for November and December 2017.
Yes, thank you. I really should have caught this last December when we did our organization meeting and planned the calendar. But when Mrs. Holmes and I, with my staff, worked on our master planning calendar, we realized that in November and in December, we scheduled a board meeting, one of the two in each of the months, overlapping some conflicts. So what I would like to propose to the board is that we make an adjustment to the existing calendar of dates for our board meetings in November and December. And what's in the agenda that you can see is that we originally planned for a November 7th and November 21st, as well as a December 5th and December 19th. Now, what we realized is that November 21st falls during the Thanksgiving holiday break. And in all practicality, many of us will be either on vacation or it will be a ghost town. So my proposal is that we cancel the November 21st meeting. And then in December, the December 5th meeting falls on a Tuesday, and the board will come back that previous Saturday from the annual conference in San Diego, the annual California School Boards Association conference. And as all of you know, it's an exhausting experience. We are going into workshops throughout the week, and to plan an agenda and to have a meaningful meeting the very next Tuesday when all of us will be gone the previous week makes that a very difficult adventure. So what I'd like to propose is that we collapse the December 5th and December 19th meeting and split it and move it to December 12th. And the reason for that is the week of December 18th is typically, well, it's the last week before the winter break, and if all of you know this by now, that's when all the winter concerts are. That's when many of us are having our holiday get-togethers with our own staffs. And so, it, again, isn't the greatest. So December 12th is the week prior to the last week prior to break. And it gives us a week buffer to come back from the annual conference and prepare for a good meeting. So that's a long-winded way of saying I'm looking to cancel November 21st. And December 5th and 19th, and instead just have November 7th and December 12th as our meeting. So in other words, in November, December, and January, we'll have just one meeting during each of those months for the evening. However, we will maintain our Measure D study sessions during those months. And that's my proposal to the board.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Prater. Discussion from the board. Mr. Buckman.
So I like the extra days, but my concern is that we've got in January, so my assumption is we're going to start moving some of the stuff into January's meeting from the two that we've missed. And my concern is that in January we've got the governor's proposed budget. It sounds like the audit maybe actually we're working on that possibly now, especially since we're going to be changing meetings. And I guess I'm just kind of concerned about going 3 months with one meeting. So I throw it out that we possibly might want to look at adding a meeting in January. Just throwing it out as an idea.
Yeah, we discussed this in our cabinet team today, and part of it is some of our scheduled presentations we were going to place into Friday notes for the board. So you'll still receive the information. And November 21st was already pretty light as it is, and December is normally a one meeting month anyway. It's just the way these dates fell this year. We usually had one board meeting in December and one board meeting in January anyway. So really, because of how it fell in the dates, my suggestion, and Mr. Buckman, I completely understand, because I too, you know, I see lots of volume working through our meetings. However, I do think we can strategically plan those meetings. They'll be filled, but they'll be worthwhile and meaningful meetings as we know them to be. I will put this back to the board at the December 12th meeting, where you plan out the rest of the year, and by then you might have the chance at that point to really look at January and say maybe we need an additional one in January, and I'd be certainly open to that. Mm-hmm. But this allows us to plan effectively up through the holidays, is really what this allows us to do.
Mrs. Shepherd?
So based on what Dr. Prater just indicated, with the caveat that if it's necessary, we can revisit this in December, I would move acceptance of the proposed board meeting calendar changes.
I'll second that.
I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. That's that passed by 5-0. Thank you. And moving on to item number 6.05, Measure D, ratification of change orders. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, we had a couple of change orders for the board to approve tonight. So, Kim, if you want to do the first one. So the first one was Teach Elementary School. We had we designed the new fire alarm system for us to now put into all of our school sites as we move forward. Teach was our guinea pig. It was our first school, smaller in terms of the overall site, and so we decided to start there. So Toma... Is it Toma Electric? Toma Electric had put together the plan for us, had moved forward, so they were able to get that accomplished over the course of the summer, which was great. As they put in the fire alarm system, what they realized is the new speaker system that went in required boxes, so kind of backing boxes to those, which had not been put in the bid and had not been ordered. So this change order that you have is basically to put those back, the black backs to the speaker system at Teach Elementary School. And so that's what the overall cost is for those items.
Do you want to take...
We can do both, but questions for the first item?
We have questions.
Yeah, I have a quick question. Uh-huh. Because Teach is a shared site, so the fire alarms, are they just for... Teach, or do they cover the entire
property? The whole campus.
Okay, that kind of makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to confirm that. Yeah. Thank you.
And actually, this was kind of nice because the speaker system actually ties into the phone system there. So they have a different bell. They don't have the old bell system like a lot of our other schools because of the two sites. So this actually, the speakers actually allow them to do a lot of, you know, bells or announcements over the PA system, which ties directly into the fire alarm.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this? Mr. Buckman?
Thanks. So in trying to use the knowledge that I've learned from Mr. Holcomb, when we look at the ratification change order for the Pacific contractors, and I may have misread the agenda, but it sounded like we had taken the entire thing, the entire reserve 10%, taken it down to zero.
So that this, if you go down, Kim, to the bottom. So this is just the first of two. There's actually two.
I'm sorry.
So it's okay. So this was a relatively, so this project in terms of overall change order was very small. So it was just that was the only thing that was left off in terms of the overall contract for that one.
Right.
So I'm going to go over the next.
Right. I guess I can't pass this up. But so you talked about the bells and how great it was. So I'm just wondering if it was bells and whistles or just, sorry, I couldn't resist.
So Kim, if you want to go to the next change order, go back out. So then we had our, the next one was with our painting project. So this was Sinsheimer Elementary School. It was Sunnyside Elementary School. And then probably the most work was at Del Mar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Del Mar had a lot of, you know, in terms of fixing the concrete under the doors, getting rid of the doors in the hallways all kind of had an area that kind of stuck out between the doors. So those were all taken up, open, so much more light in the area. And then the last thing that we did was at the very end of those Del Mar hallways is kind of a shield. You know, it's a kind of a visual shield. And we had at first had looked at just getting rid of it altogether and not having it and adding air to it. But with the way the restrooms are located on the end of those hallways, just for privacy sakes and just in general, we decided, hey, let's go back and put that area back in. So we also tried to do at Del Mar in particular was to get rid of the wood. So those were made of wood. The front office building was made of wood. There were other areas around the campus that kind of had a wood fascia to them. Mm-hmm. So we've taken those all off and restuccoed those areas. So this was another example where we were going to take the wood off and we were going to restucco those. So as we did that, as they went through and they took the old panels off, what they realized was the complete interior of those wing walls was, there was nothing left. So they had to be completely redone. So that's the first part of it, which is item number 3. So that was approximately $7,000 to rebuild the interior of those wing walls. That's what the cost was. The very first item, when they did the painting itself, so unfortunately we did not put our district spec on the bid. So the type of paint that they bid was a much lower level in terms of, you know, use paint-wise. So that was basically a direct reflection of the added costs per gallon of having the better paint that we should use at a school site. In terms of spraying down, you know, the use that a school site takes is not your normal, you know, cheap home paint that you would buy. So that's the biggest item that's on, item number 1, which is the $15,000, which is roughly $10 a gallon. So expensive in terms of the overall level of paint. And so, again, they call it super paint for a reason. At Sunnyside, we ran into lead issues. Insofar as when you have a school site where you have preschool children, so children under the age of 6, there are different rules and regulations in terms of how you deal with painting projects. And so in this case, because we do have the preschools, and both from adult ed as well as some of our tenants on that site, we had to go to a whole separate measure of lead mitigation that Mr. Holcomb can probably give you more detail on, but it very, very important for us to have that done correctly. So they actually came in. So that's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday coming in. Gentlemen, you know, the gentlemen and ladies with the full suits on and making sure that the lead was abated
as they move forward with the painting project. So that cost associated, that was it's expensive to go through that process. The last one was at Sunnyside. The canopy was not part of the bid package. So to basically power wash it, spray it, paint it. And then also after they finished Del Mar, they realized we should probably paint the flagpole. We got this ugly flagpole sitting out there with this beautiful, new, fresh campus looking good. So that was part of the lift to paint the flagpole as well as the flagpole itself. So those are the items. We're about 9%, I would say, on the overall change order. So it's
okay,
not,
well,
you know, if you take 62 of 73, shouldn't be 10, right? I think the fiscal staff might have, right? Am I wrong on that?
I thought it was 73.
It's about 9%, right? About 9%. We'll have to adjust the amount remaining on the 10%.
Okay, that was my question, because I thought it was pretty coincidental, yes, that 63. We went to somehow we got to exactly the full 10%, yeah, and I just thought that was coincidental.
I think that's a typo on her behalf.
Great.
She didn't
okay.
That.
Well, that was my concern. Was
yeah, absolutely.
Somehow it got right down to the zero.
So this project is complete, finished. They're doing some punch list items for those three sites. They look fantastic. If you've seen, I mean, Del Mar in particular, really wow, right? To me, when I walk on that campus now, it made a huge difference in terms of just opening it up and doing things. So there's a little bit of work left at Del Mar. We're going to fix kind of a sidewalk area around the I think science room area that needs to be cleaned up, where they've planted some new grass there. But it really made a really nice difference, both at Sunnyside as well as Sinsheimer. If you've been to Sinsheimer as well, they've taken some of the landscaping out of the front, the new paint. It really just adds a lot to the school. So this was a bid project. So it was a low bid project that came through. So when you have additive items like that, they end up changer. So it's not, you know, release lease sec, you're working, you're going through things as you go through. This is becomes very strict, and so it's very important that, you know, from our project management side, that they're watching those costs, how much labor, materials and supplies, getting real bills for those items, those types of things.
Is there anyone from anyone in the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, is anyone from the board? Mr. Buffman?
I'd like to motion approval of the change orders.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Are you going to stick around?
Yes. So
yes,
the last item before action consent is, you know, lease back in January kind of changed. So with to make it legal, they put some new guidelines around it, and they added this caveat, which was probably some politics between unions and the state, and they added what's called the skilled and trained workforce requirement. So it's something where each sub that's on a particular leaseback job has to have 30% to start of skilled and trained workers, which basically means those workers have gone through an apprenticeship program. So basically kind of part of the union, part of that tie-in. That amount is supposed to increase each year. So 40%, 50% on and throughout the time as these add. So our local contractors in the areas who have done tons of leaseback work over the past 15 years with school districts, as we went through, I don't think when we went through these agreements and we entered into them that they fully understood the requirements and the paperwork that would be required of them in order for them to get paid. And so because it was kind of was it every sub? Was it the entire job had to have 30%? So it was kind of unclear a little bit for them as they went into. So in this case, we had RSH Construction had won the low bid to do our lease back project for Morrow Elementary School, which is a paint, roofing, and asphalt project, basically. And so they had gone out, they got subs, they'd gone through that, and I think in those conversations, because we meet with them a lot, even through a leaseback project in particular, where you're looking at the plans, your designs, you're talking, you're going through it. So over the course of the 2 months that we went through it, I think the realization of the requirement and being able to actually get workers to be able to do that work became an issue.
And so instead of holding them to something that they weren't going to be able to do and talking with them, it was kind of a mutual, hey, we'll let you out, you know, no cost to the district, no cost to you, and we'll go ahead and we'll look at doing, you know, doing this in a different way, and most likely looking at probably bidding those particular jobs. We have another job with another firm in town to do the C.L. Smith project, and so we're going to see how that, but still some of those same, it's not just RSH is my point, so the other local contractors are going to have a difficult time with that, skilled and trained, just in terms of getting the required workforce to meet that. Fortunately, right now, it seems like ACME, our two big schools at Solohai and Morro Bejai, are able to kind of fulfill those requirements with lease spec and skilled and trained. We'll see what happens to the prices of those projects as they have to go out and try to get people to bid the work and meet those requirements. But thus far, it seems like the ACME is able to kind of get the work done. But again, we have the Annex and J-Wing bids coming soon. So we're going to see firsthand. We're going to get the C.L. Smith bid this week. So depending on how that goes, what that looks like, you know, we're going to kind of see the temperament of what is this skilled and trained workforce requirement doing to price, and what's that? What's the future hold for the district in terms of that? So it may come to a point where we just decide on smaller projects or one-off projects that we just bid projects in that way, because if it's a design bid build project, there's none of those requirements. So it's never changing in terms of the complexities around building and in particular schools. So I don't know if Mr. Holcomb can add anything into that conversation. I tried to sum it up as best I could.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing no one. Anyone? Mrs. Sheffer.
It's my understanding that based on the work we did, and before contracts were, and bids were ever let, and before contracts were created or early on in the process, that we knew this was going to be occurring, that that these new rules would be happening. And as I recall, those numbers are even going to increase
yes.
over time. So am I correct in thinking that the construction companies, those bidding on our jobs, were aware of that requirement or should have been aware of that requirement and should not have been surprised when it happened? I mean, I'm not trying to point any fingers. I'm just, you know, we kind of got to this place where we're needing to do this. And I understand there are no financial ramifications, and I understand that things will just be kind of re-let or something in a way that is not going to create delays or a financial hit to the district. But I'm just curious about, are we going to see this problem occur again with other contractors?
I think what's going to happen is we're going to see kind of C.L. Smith this week, what that bid looks like. We're going to see Annex. We're going to see J-Wing. I think ACME being probably a bigger firm, it may be able to pull subs that, you know, from different areas, those types of things. But for RSH in this, you know, I don't want to, you know, cast any blame on RSH aspect of it.
I
think they tried, again, even for us, as we went through in terms of what skilled and trained really meant, that it was per sub versus just 30% of the workers on the project, even that was something that was, we even had to get our attorney to kind of, you know, double check with this and make sure. And so in the end, it's just trying to work with our local contractors, and you know, we don't want to hurt anybody or do anything that's going to move forward. But
the last thing I'm trying to do is cast aspersions on anyone. I'm just trying to understand how this, you know, it's kind of a change that's occurred. Everyone knew it was coming, but it's occurred kind of midstream, I guess,
is what makes it
tricky.
Well, yeah, and we'll see a change over the next year or so as people go to school. But this, it first affected us on lease back. We missed it Remember, we hurried to get our deal put together prior to July 1 right. on design build, so we don't have that requirement. But on leaseback, that idea came, what was it, maybe April, May, when we started focusing on it. We thought perhaps the contractors would be up to speed by then, but, you know, they have to send their people to school. Mm-hmm. So do they take them off the jobs? Everybody's busy. Do they take them off the job they're on and pay them to go to school? So most of them just let it slide, and then we caught the effect of that. I would guess that probably 95% of the local contractors right now in this area are not qualified. So the recognition of the problem came upon them late, and we all tried to find it out. We worked with our attorney. Is there any exemptions from this? There was none, except for LA Unified. They're exempt.
Okay, so that was my follow-up question. There's not like a grandfather clause that if you have work underway, that the contracts were signed before this time period.
We tore the statutes apart okay. 6 ways to Sunday looking for them, but it's sewn up pretty tight. And you'll see this. Well, you'll see all the contractors get up to speed over the next 2 or 3 years. They'll all get their people through school and they won't have any work. Yeah. And then we'll see it come into effect, I think, for design, bid, build also. So there won't be any exclusions mm-hmm. from it.
Okay. Wow. So
and it will equal a better workforce, but it will be more expensive in the interim because there aren't enough contractors qualified. They know it. So their bid structure is going to be higher
right.
until competition equalizes it. So.
A statute without a loophole. That doesn't happen. A statute without a loophole. That doesn't happen very often.
There are some bills going through right now to try to limit that percentage from rising as high as they currently have it. So it'll be interesting to see because you can imagine this over the course of the state and what people were used to under lease-leaseback provisions, and now with both design build and lease-leaseback, it's definitely a different ballgame.
Well,
especially
a bill,
as it ramps up.
There's a bill at the state level that they're working on, supposed to take effect January 1, which freezes it at 30%, but nobody can meet 30%, so it's not much relief, really. So
again, in talking with RSH, kind of mutually, we felt like it was the best for both to go ahead, again, no cost to the district at all, to terminate and to move forward in a different manner.
But as the floor is moving beneath us, there's some opportunities. If we go out for design, bid, build, or break them up into smaller projects, the competition to get those jobs will be fierce because nobody qualifies for skilled and trade.
Right.
So, we take lemons and try to make lemonade, and I think we'll be successful at it. But we're going to come back to you, and you're going to say, no, wait a minute, you just said X, and now you're saying Y. But that's because the environment's changing with us, and we're trying to find those ways to be more cost-effective. And I think we will. But be prepared for change.
And hopefully the Scale Smith bid comes back. I mean, hopefully it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and I think the key word that and I understand the concept of having the trades percentage going up to 30% may be disturbing to some, but I think it's affecting the smaller contractors now. But prior to this, the contractors could bring in people to do the work that weren't necessarily skilled. And so I think this is really a good thing, especially when we're talking about schools and a building that's going to involve our students. So just wanted to get that in there.
I guarantee you there are some smart contractors out there right now that are getting all of their people skilled and trained because they'll be the only ones who can take all these lease-leaseback potential projects from districts.
So we're looking for action on
yes, please.
This item.
So I move I guess we'd call it approval of the termination for convenience RSH Construction and the Morrill Elementary lease-leaseback contract.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We're moving on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if there's anything you would like to have pulled. 7.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 7.02, acceptance of donations. 7.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 7.04, approval of warrants and payroll.
Pull.
Yes.
Please.
And yes, 7.05, disposition of surplus property. And 7.06, approval of field study trip request for Morabe High School to Indianapolis, Indiana.
I move approval of items 7.01 to 7.03 and 7.05 to and 7.06.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 5.0. And, 5-0. And Mr. Buckman?
Thanks. Hi, Julie. So I was going through the warrants and payroll, and I just have maybe three or four questions.
Sure.
I noticed there's several places where it says U.S. Bank Corp., and that it sounds like we're leasing property from them or leasing something.
Those are our copy machines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know U.S. Bank Corp. was in the copy business, but...
Well, they're the leasing company, yeah.
Okay, thanks. San Luis City Waste. I don't know if these are site by site, the bills that were in there, the warrants.
I'd have to look at that one. I'm
yeah,
not sure,
and I don't need to answer now, I guess. But one of them was as high as 16,000. So I just wondered, those that are in there, are those monthly, semi-monthly,
yeah,
quarterly?
I'd have to look at it.
Great. I gotcha.
Excuse me.
I was looking at all the Home Depot stuff that was in there. Office Depot. Thanks.
Oh, Office Depot. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't buy paper at Home Depot. And I just back in my mind, there's something where there's either a purchase pool with the state, or I thought we voted to enter one with the county at some point.
Well, we have. I think it's called Just in Time. With Office Depot, we get a discount, and they get it to us like the next day. It's amazing, really. But these are probably all startup supplies for the school sites. Since school's just starting, it's huge this time.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That probably explains it. And then I mentioned this to you earlier, and we both had a chuckle. So within these, there's two from Bellevue Santa Fe, mm-hmm. and they're exactly the same amount. And so I just wonder, is that 2 months or?
Yes. Yes, and it says it's July's and August. It says the same description under both, but one is for July, one is for August. Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
So I'll move approval of 7.04.
Mr. Buckman, just one moment, please, for
sure.
Discussion by Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the last page on, and you don't have to go there, on Fund 73, which I think we talked about earlier. I believe Fund 73, as was explained to me by Mr. Pinkerton, is the Morabe Scholarship Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to acknowledge that there were three students who received scholarships out of that, and to thank the family that donated that money to our Morabe students.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Yes, very good. Mr. Buckman, then?
Yes, thanks. I'd like to make a motion to approve consent item 7.04.
And I'll second that.
There's a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And I'll have to abstain or recuse. My wife is receiving one of those warrants.
Ah, yes. Okay, so that passes 4-0 with one abstention and two absences. And moving on now to advanced agenda, Mr.
Yes.
Unger.
Yes, I have an item for advanced agenda. In December 2016, I became aware of, after speaking with the CSBA Director at Large for Native Americans, about what I can only call the genocide of Native Americans in California. I have an interest in learning about how are we as educators presenting topics like that, and specifically that topic, to our students. And I think it's just something that's important to me, and I would look for support from the board to get that information.
I could add one bit to that, is that I know that at San Luis Obispo High School, in any case, Howard Zinn's history book is taught as part of U.S. history.
Mm-hmm. So, I think
So my question is this something you're looking for as a presentation at a board meeting or Friday focus, or what's your preference?
Well, I think my preference initially would be in a Friday focus, but then I would reserve the right, obviously, always, as I do, as we all do, to bring this forward as something that perhaps we might want a presentation for.
And I would certainly support that.
Okay.
And I, too, would support that. And I just want to mention that it was Chris, and I'm hoping that you saw it, but that, it looks like we're doing away with the requirements to do the missions and the sugar cubes and all that. And part of it is the fact that the indigenous folks were so badly treated during the mission period.
Thank you.
Mr. Prisonberry?
Yeah, I just... the whole subject of genocide is certainly worthy of our attention. There are those who would also want to deal with the Armenian genocide. I mean, is so. Of course, the Holocaust is generally, you know, treated. Probably you're right in the sense that for Americans, the genocide that Native Americans faced throughout the country is a very significant part of our history and not always well dealt with. So, I mean, I would support it, but I'd also would like to see us, if we're going to talk about the subject, talk about it in general.
Yeah, and I would add. Yeah, I think... I have an interest. I specifically mentioned, of course, our Native American population. But I think you're right, Jim. I think a bigger and equally important topic is how do we discuss those kinds of very difficult things with our students? And it's something I just have an interest in, and I think especially now it's really important.
So do we have a consensus, or should we? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Unger. And that takes
I have another one
to
too.
Another board report by Mr. Unger.
Well, actually, I'd like to now talk about something that is on the minds of many people in the United States because of a decision that was made by the president today, and that's to eliminate the deferred action of childhood arrivals, the DACA program, better known as the Dreamer program. Many of you may know, I'm a student teacher supervisor at Cal Poly, and today President Armstrong sent out a letter to the Cal Poly community reinforcing the Cal State University and Cal Poly's commitment to Dreamers. I know that in December we made a strong statement of support for all of our students. And I'm wondering if, because of this particular action, if we need to revisit that and have a board discussion on whether we need to either reinforce what we said, particularly about, I believe it's the Pillar decision, which says that all students are allowed to be in school no matter what. We obviously would not know who Dreamers are in our schools, and it's probably not appropriate for us to know that because we want to serve all children. So I want to see if we want to say more about that, especially today. And I want to, this would be something that we would, I don't know if it's, if we want to do this as a topic of discussion at an upcoming board meeting, or how we would want to handle it, or if there's an interest in doing that.
So is the question, do we want to agendize a discussion of DACA and how it affects our district?
I think it's appropriate for us to limit whatever we talk about to our students and whatever kinds of things our students might be facing, because we are an educational institution and we have a responsibility to make sure that all students are served and that all students feel safe in our schools.
Mm-hmm. And how this fits in with our already existing Safe Schools resolution that we've already passed. I'm in favor of that. Does anyone like to?
That's all means all.
Yeah.
So we would all like to agendize this item. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, so, Mr. Unger, perhaps something like principals reporting what they are doing at their sites or things like that to hear from. Do you want to hear specific stories or do you want to know what the
I think what
Dr. Prater is indicating, what message he's sending? Or
I think,
guess maybe that's something at PLRC you can all work out. But
I think I'd like to maybe hear what it is we're doing to make sure on the ground that all of our students are feeling safe and that all students are feeling welcomed, and that we'll do everything within our power and within legality to protect our students. Would that be something, Dr. Prater, that you could chew on? Does that give you... I know it's not a lot of guidance, but does it give you enough to start working on something?
It does. It's clearly on all of our minds. Today's announcement, it wasn't a surprise. We heard that it was coming, and so it just confirmed the terrible reality that our many of our students and their families have to wrestle with still yet another very difficult situation from the federal government. And so you heard Rutik from representing Slo High today, and you heard him speak about their strong focus on inclusivity as a school, making sure that every child feels welcomed and supported. What makes this the decision on DACA today so difficult is it stretches beyond the school. It's, again, the whole purpose of the Safe Schools resolution that we did was recognizing that kids are coming to school afraid, not because of what's happening at school, but because of what's happening in their home and out in their immediate neighborhood and the fears that go with it. So what you're asking me is something to reflect on and bring back maybe as a potential agenda item is what specifically, what examples can we point to that say, here, this is what we're trying to do to welcome students regardless of their circumstances, insist upon their being included, and also ways in which we're supporting their families and reaching out to our families in our community. And that's something we continue to work on. And I would be certainly open and willing to bring a presentation forward and open that up for a dialogue amongst the board to so that you better understand what we're trying to do.
So would the board like to indicate with a thumbs up of support for this agenda item? You got it. Thank you, Chris. And I believe we are ready for board reports. Ms. Drunker.
So just a couple of things. Of course, I went to some back-to-school nights. I saw Mr. Buckman at Baywood, Monarch Grove, and Los Osos Middle School. It was great to see him and great to see the schools.
That was all in one night, Chris.
It was all, two of them were in one night.
That.
Yeah, Lone's was the next night. But it's always great to go there. And then Dr. Prater and I met at Morro Bay High School a couple of Thursdays ago on a project that he and I are working on. And at the end of the meeting, Mr. Alsott came up and said, I got a surprise for you guys. And he took us into one of the construction relocatables, and we met Mr. Peepers. Mr. Peepers is the owl that Morro Bay High School is using to do gull abatement, essentially. Mr. Peepers is not there to dive bomb and kill gulls. Mr. Peepers is there. His goal is to frighten them, and I believe that's exactly what he did. He was a very, very large owl with talons about the size of my hands. Dr. Prater held him. It was really pretty fun to hear what they're doing there. Mr. Quisenberry could probably talk about the importance of gull abatement at Morro Bay High School.
Mr. Peepers is certainly a non-threatening name. That's kind of sweet.
Mr. Buckman.
Oh, thank you. So I just a few things and a couple of shout-outs. One, I want to recognize that Aaron Primer, our food services director, just amazing work being done. Aaron did a presentation in Washington, D.C. this summer on the value of using American and local food procurement, and is expecting, and probably by now has been invited to Sacramento to do the same thing. She also let me know that she's done some more research. I'm sorry to bring up chocolate milk again, but some more research on the carrageenan that's in the chocolate milk that we're now using, and its effect on blood pressure among women, and especially African American and Hispanic women. So her last note to me is that she's going to bring it to the Wellness Committee and possibly bring it to the manufacturers, the people that make the milk, and wonder if they could possibly get us milk without it. So that was exciting news. I also want to send a shout out to Mrs. Hernandez over at Pacheco School. I am so happy now. I have a child back in the San Luis Coastal School District. It is my grandson, and he has Mrs. Hernandez, which is just going to be wonderful over at Pacheco School. And before Mrs. Hernandez and Rick Mayfield, the principal, knew that this was my grandson, evidently he had a rough day, and Rick came in and read to him one-on-one. So I was like, whew, that was kind of cool. Did attend the ribbon cutting with Jim and Catherine at Pacheco as well for the new playground. There is a rumor that Catherine personally tested some of the playground equipment.
Sort of unintentionally, the earth fell below my feet.
Okay. and you just reached up.
A dip in there.
But many of us didn't get to see that, so I don't know.
I'd like to see that. It was fun.
It was good. It was a great groundbreaking. I also got to attend the Teach Back to School night, and the teachers. I think the entire staff of teachers were wearing black. It was rather impressive. I didn't know whether I was going to a cocktail party or not, but they were all wearing black. I'm working on the subcommittee with Ellen and Kimberly reviewing board policies, and it seems like there's going to be a fair amount of work there. It's interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman, and thank you for serving on that committee. That is a lot of work, and Ms. Sheffer as well.
I attended the Sinsheimer Back to School Night and learned there was a little activity that was so fun because each teacher spoke about something. Kimberly was there that we may not know about him or her, and I learned the great variety of experiences our teachers have had is really fun to learn about. You know, one carried the Olympic torch. Someone else had walked the trail in Spain last summer, and you know, just hearing each teacher talk about just one little tidbit or nugget of information about himself or herself was really fun. And I also attended the Morro Bay High School Back to School Night, which was also fun to hear the choir sing and see the enthusiasm of the parents who were there. And as well, because it is an enduring interest of mine, the closure of Diablo, I attended a public hearing a town hall meeting that Salud Carbajal had put together that consisted of, that he emceed or hosted, and there were people there from the National Regulatory Commission and Diablo as well, and taking public comment regarding the closure and the impact it will have on the employees, the community, the environment, all kinds of things were covered, and it was interesting to attend and hear what people had to say. And that's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, I want to announce one more time that the Family Fun Fair this Sunday on the 10th for Grandparents' Day, it will be at the South Bay Community Center. And it is on our local KCBX station, if you listen to that, it's being announced. So that's from 12 to 4. Lots of games and activities. Everything is mostly free. It's not totally free, but there's a lot of things to entertain children of all ages. I also wanted to mention that Saturday the 9th, I believe at 5 p.m., is a memorial service. It's not at the actual service, but I guess a reception, a memorial reception for Fred Pop, who was a long, long time teacher for San Luis Coastal. And I'm following on Facebook. There's just many, many former students, wonderful things said about Fred. And I look forward to attending that.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. I also had the opportunity to attend that town meeting, and it was fascinating. A lot of information there, and a lot of questions asked. In fact, so many questions that Mr. Carbonell offered to come back again, because there will be more town meetings. So that was really helpful to attend. And Morobe High School and Los Osos Middle School back to school nights. I found it difficult to get to all of the elementary schools at the same time. But, so that made that a little bit of a problem. But yes, it's fun to get back, to see everyone's excitement and back into school. I believe we're at the end of our meeting, folks. And so we are calling for adjournment, and we will be meeting again at the study session on the 14th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.